Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. Oscar nominations were announced, and we have a guy who's feeling some Oscar heat.
No guy.
With two movies.
Two. Not one, but two. Two movies.
Two movies.
Yes.
Joker and The Irishman.
Hey.
Michael Scott. Drunken Miller.
Thank you for pronouncing it right.
And medical tech advisor in studio. You're from Connecticut. How do you end up on the set of the Joker? And you're in Joker, right?
I'm actually in Joker, yes. I have a supporting role in Joker as well.
See that?
Yes. Wow. So it's quite unique. But the thing I always tell people is it's a combination of who you know and what you know. And integrity gets you anywhere in this business.
Okay.
Irishman and Joker are very connected. The assistant director and his directing team were also the assistant director and directing team from The Irishman.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they get a good crew, and they bring it with them
exactly,
everywhere.
They bring him with you. And also, if you've made a good impression, they give you a call. Now, on Irishman, I was the medical tech advisor for Bob De Niro for the entire run.
Wait, now what?
I was the medical tech advisor for Robert De Niro.
Okay, so what is that? You're telling him how to be old?
Well, they shoot out of continuity when they shoot a movie.
Yeah.
So you have to go through, and his character, Frank Sheehan, had chronic illnesses.
Gotcha.
And so they wanted somebody that wasn't a yes man to Marty. They wanted somebody that could tell them, okay, this is how this person is, and the cheats that they'd be doing actually having this chronic illness. Not what they look up in a book and say, okay, given this and this and this, this is what a doctor would say this person has.
Okay.
But what this person would actually do.
Give us an example.
An example would be like my poor mother. If she would use her cane when she goes to the doctor's office or to church. But the rest of the time she's wearing it on her arm and walking 2 feet above the ground with the cane.
Okay.
Those types of things. Or not.
In a movie, that could be a problem, though, right? Because you could say, in that last scene, he was using it, and now he's not.
And that's where they also look at you saying, okay, is this viable, or the critic's going to come back to us?
Okay, so not everything you say they use, right?
Right, but for film, they use it more than television. Because film, they have this IMAX screen where people can critique things.
Yeah.
Whereas on TV, they get away with it, and they say, we're not going to do this.
Right.
For example, there's this one scene that's in the movie with The Irishman where he's sitting with his estranged daughter. And he doesn't get up at all. But I insisted that while he's sitting there, his forearm canes are right next to him at the chair. And they were like, why? He's not going to get up. I said, because here's the guy that's saying that he took out Hoffa.
Right.
And he's been strong and independent all of his life. And now he hasn't talked to his daughter in over 13 years. And this is the first time he's actually meeting with her in her house. If, in theory, his character had to get up to go to the bathroom or anything like that, he would not ask his daughter for help.
No.
He would be a strong person and get himself.
You had to think of that?
Yes.
Nice.
That's brilliant. Yeah, all right. So that's why you're on these scenes.
Exactly right.
All right. So there was one scene with Robert De Niro where he was by himself in the hall and he fell.
Oh, that was awesome.
That was, it was so sad and real.
The thing is, we had the author of the book that was there, Charles Brandt. He was there and the screenwriters were there, but they didn't have everything.
That dude's got to be old. No?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's up there.
He's up there.
All right. So were you like, here, you fall and show Bob how to do it?
Exactly.
No.
It did trip him, actually.
The thing is, they had to piece together how it happened.
Right.
Because they had the reports that he ended up in the hospital. He ended up going into a nursing home, but he didn't have a stroke. And so then I had to do some detective work. I looked at the medications that he was on and then also his history of illnesses that he had. And then I called up a pharmacist that I knew and I said, listen, we're talking 1999, 2000. What medications would be being used then? So we actually preset that scene with him falling with when he was dealing with the pill boxes. So that way he would actually double dose his medications for his heart blood pressure and take too much blood pressure medication for 3 or 4 days.
I had no idea that this movie was so accurate.
So intricate,
in that
area.
Yeah. You know, and you just kind of see him. And so with the pillbox, my writing is actually on camera.
Okay.
Because they actually have like little cheat cards that a doctor would set up saying, put two white ones in and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they were accurate. So Then in that scene where he falls, we made sure that the bathroom was one of those older ones that has the space heater in it.
Yeah.
So it has that red glow. So he was in the bathroom at night. It's a warmer bathroom. Now he comes walking out, and he doesn't fall until about 10 feet out of the bathroom door where it's cooler air. Now, what was messed up is they did an awesome job on makeup.
You know, when I'm watching it, I'm not doing that math.
Right.
No, I know, but that's why it's there, because Marty has so much money invested in this, and Netflix, with their Netflix police, and it's the fact that it's shot on film.
Yeah.
That you have all these things online, things wrong with films, things that they wanted to make sure that this worked. And it also helps the actor.
Yeah.
Because this way, Bob can get into it going, okay, so what happened? I said, well, you're feeling very lightheaded and everything like that, and your legs just get rubbery and you fall.
Isn't that weird? You're talking to Robert De Niro.
The worst part was learning to call him Bob.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm Bob. And it's like, no, it's Mr. De Niro. No.
Yeah. I'm Bob. You want a fresh one? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, I was taping this. This is actually the one that was on his hand.
What is that?
His port.
Oh, you know? Okay.
And I was like, I was putting fake IVs and ports on him like daily. And stuff like that, depending on where he was. If he was outside of the hospital or if he was
We got to talk about the Joker, too.
Yeah.
Right. He has a really great story about explaining how a bathtub death would happen.
It's not a bathtub. This was the hospital.
Right. Okay. It's a little bit of a spoiler, I think, if you haven't seen the movie yet.
I'm hoping most people have seen it by now.
All right.
Because, I mean, it has made over $1 billion and it's out there on DVD.
All right, so you're screwed if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
All right, we got a big-time movie guy in the studio here.
Big time.
He's got, he's worked on two movies that are getting Oscar heat nominated.
Look at that, see that?
The Joker and The Irishman.
Nice.
It's Michael Scott Druckenmiller, and he's a former Connecticut School of Broadcasting graduate and Connecticut resident, so
thanks,
we're very, very proud.
Yes.
Tell us about this scene.
All right,
the Joker.
The scene for the medical tech advising, as far as opposed to the one I was in, it was really neat because, again, we're shooting out of order, so I wasn't sure exactly which rating we were going to have or anything. So I'm watching this rehearsal where, now, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it,
right? If you have not downloaded or streamed The Joker and you plan to do it,
right.
Dial it down, walk away from the radio, because you're going to hear deal here.
Exactly right.
All right. He finally has it, and he goes to kill his mother. Now, this scene specifically is also where you no longer have empathy for his character, because no matter what happens, you can't relate to this.
No.
Okay. And so I'm watching the scene, and I'm shaking my head, and Todd looks at me, and he goes, okay, what's wrong? And I go, well, first question I have is, what rating are we going for? And without hesitation, he goes, it's a hard R. I go, great. I'm going to tell you exactly what will happen. She's dying too fast. He's like, what? So then I explain the process of how...
How is he killing her?
He's killing her by taking a pillow out from behind her and suffocating her.
Oh, smothering her, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, initially in the rehearsal, he also was taking out the oxygen and everything from her nasal cannula. And I'm going, no, this is a crime of passion. He's not going to do that. He's just going to grab the pillow and go and suffocate her. But... it's not going to happen as fast as he's seen on TV or in movies.
Right.
And that's also going to frustrate him, because now he's also being lied to by the media that he's watched at home. And then also his mother is being defiant once again and not dying. So I pointed out to Penny, who was being played by Frances Conroy from American Horror Story. She's a great lady.
Cool.
And this helped her get something to do, too. I said, you've had a stroke, so you're paralyzed on your left side. But your right side is going to have a rush of adrenaline. You're going to want to run away. So in the movie, you see her legs starting to kick and also going up to try to grab the back of him. And then I talked to VFX and said, okay, the heart rate has to go up, but the pulse ox is going down. And then after literally almost 3 minutes, it just stops abruptly. And they're like, what? I said, she doesn't die from suffocation. She dies from a heart attack.
Oh.
Because it's just too much. And then when he takes the pillow off, the nose is broken and the nasal cannula falls out. And you can see the process with Joaquin as he's processing.
That has to be a brutal scene.
It is. And,
yeah.
And all of a sudden it clicks. And because he had more of a hard time playing, I shouldn't say hard, a challenging time playing Arthur than he did Joker, because it was such an in-depth character of going back and forth with the psychosis.
Yeah.
And so it clicked with him and everything. And
so you're telling him how this is going to go.
Yes.
And you could see he's... listening
and processing.
Wow.
Right. And then Todd at the end looks at me and he goes, all right, Michael, I understand you know how to save people. And he takes a deep drag on his vape and he goes, but how the F do you know how to kill someone? And with that, David Webb, who's the assistant director, who was also the assistant director on Irishman, comes over and he says, puts his hand on my shoulder. He says, I worked with Michael on the Irishman too. And in addition to his SAG card and his medical credentials, I believe he also has his veteran ID card. I believe he was Special Forces PsyOps. And Todd just goes white.
Oh,
and he goes,
say,
no more questions. Let's just yeah. shoot it. You know? And so.
All right. So I asked.
That whole moment.
Right.
That's something. And can we have a little bit of audio from that scene?
I can't play the conversation that happens before it because I didn't have time to beep tone it. But
gotcha.
Yeah, here's where the pillow's over her face.
Ah. That's brutal.
They want it as realistically uncomfortable as possible.
That's me trying to get up in the morning.
Wow.
You know, they didn't want gore. They wanted
right.
things that made people look at themselves.
Right.
And that's what is great with the movie. Like, we
that's
know.
That's tough. And the longer it goes, I mean, the harder it is.
Yeah.
The more
yeah.
awkward
so
it is.
Yeah.
Intense.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And it's literally made so that way, okay, why do I like this movie? Why do I empathize with this character? And I can't empathize with him anymore.
No, now you're off.
Right.
You're off the train.
Bandwagon's gone.
No, but this is why they hire this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that scene becomes a big thing.
Yeah, that's why it's a front Oscar.
And they would have just done a quick pillow, couple seconds.
Right.
She's done. Right?
Yeah.
And it becomes
a little
this
music.
Whole,
yep.
Ooh,
yep.
Man.
Yeah, it sounded brutal.
Feels real.
You can hear her, like,
real.
Punching him and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a guy in the studio who's involved with two of the movies nominated, The Joker and The Irishman, both for Best Picture.
Yep.
Wow.
Look at that.
Michael Scott Drunken Miller. In studio. He's a Connecticut guy. In fact, he just got a text from Sean McDonald with the Waterbury Fire Department.
Oh.
Who said, quote, get off my radio.
Oh. That means he likes
you. Thank you for what you do, Sean.
Yes.
Not that, but
right.
the other stuff.
Right, right, right.
And for listening.
Yeah.
And for listening.
Right.
Yay.
All that. See that? See?
The Joker actually led the way. They had the most nominations of any other movie.
It's yes. insane.
11 Oscar nominations and 10 for The Irishman.
Smooth.
Wow.
And the thing is that there's also 11 BAFTA nominations for The Joker as well.
What does that mean?
Those are the European Oscars.
Yeah.
And we joked because there's a conspiracy theory going out because all the clocks in Joker are at 11:11. And now I was joking online that that's why we had a psychic tell us that we're going to have 11 nominations in America and 11 nominations over in Europe. So
nice.
It's 11:11.
I didn't know that all the clocks were set. Is that something everybody knows?
It's something that people are starting to pick up. That was done on purpose.
The ones who paid attention.
Wow. You had a speaking role in The Joker?
Yes.
I'm going to play this. I don't know.
The volume's turned down. You have to turn it up.
All right.
Because I turned it down for studio.
So this is going to be, just off a cell phone speaker here.
Okay. Hey, there you are.
Did your mother take any medications?
No.
No. Sir, when was the last time you spoke to her?
I don't know.
Now the ambulance is going through the tunnel. That was good.
Thank you.
That was a pretty long scene.
It was.
You said a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
Did
was
you
my,
screw up any lines? Like,
no, that was my ADR at the very beginning as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is there a lot of pressure? Because all these big-time actors are around. Everything's running. Everybody's watching.
Right.
All the lights are on.
Right. You're
flubbing. Like, oh, you say one word. When's the last time you talked to your mom?
Damn it!
So they're rolling the stretcher out of wherever, and then they're going down the stairs, and that was one more step, you know, and all this, and Michael's directing the whole thing and asking people questions, and then they get in the ambulance and close the door. And by the time you asked, when's the last time you spoke to your mother? Or the other guy asked that.
The other guy asked that.
Well, but you were medications.
I was medications, and I was also asking who he was when he shows up on scene, and then also telling the other guy, you know, even though he has resistance, to keep pumping in. We're going to put her on room air, but then we're going to intubate inside the ambulance and everything. We actually did an intubation scene that didn't make it into the movie.
Oh, wow.
But what was really amazing with that, too, is we didn't shoot that in studio. We shot that on the street, including the interior ambulance scenes.
Wow. That should be harder,
so
right?
Not only is it harder.
You can't control anything else.
Think about, we have a stunt driver driving.
Yep.
You have Francis Conroy on the stretcher. You have Joaquin sitting on the bench. You have myself, and you have the other paramedic. But then you also have Todd Phillips. You have the assistant director, David Webb. You have Larry, cinematographer, with the camera. You have the boom operator. And then in the front jump seat, you have the sound mixer, because we're not in a studio, so he has to go with us.
Yeah.
And you're talking very tight quarters, sitting on apple boxes, bending down, getting different angles, and then the stunt driver having to back us up in the middle of Queens at 2 a.m. in the morning to where we started from, and then all of a sudden me hitting the top of the ceiling, letting him know, Joaquin's already jumped out, he's lit a cigarette, he didn't want to wait, you know, it's like, it's like, okay.
Cigarette break.
Was it weird working with him? He's kind of a strange guy to us. Is he strange in person?
He is mesmerizing. I tell other people that work in the business that working with him, not only as an actor, but then as a medical tech advisor, and having as many days on set as I had in such proximity, was better than any master's acting class I've ever taken.
Really?
To watch his process and to see how he actually, I tell people, he's not up for one Oscar. He played two distinctly different characters. We never shot Arthur or Joker on the same day, because he had a different process for each one. And his isolation from other cast and crew when he was Arthur was also because Arthur was isolated.
Right.
So, you know, to watch him do that, and unlike other people that rehearse and get it right on rehearsal, he doesn't do that. His acting process is get an idea of what's going on, get the technical down, and then let's just shoot it. And
technical
then shoot it.
Meaning the steps and where you're going to say what you're going to say.
No, not what you're going to say, but what's going to happen and why. And then he approaches it different, because he doesn't think that if you get everything right with who says what and who doesn't jump on each other's lines and everything like that, then that's not authentic. Then it's recreating. He wants the authenticness there caught on film. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want the director to go, that was a perfect rehearsal, now let's do that again. He wants 22 times of different variations.
And pick the best one.
And pick the best one.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a long day.
Oh, yeah.
How long did it take to shoot that ambulance scene where they're bringing the mom down on the stretcher?
That was a 15-hour day.
Whoa.
15 hours. How long was that scene? It was like a minute, right?
Yeah. Well,
wow.
Yeah. Honestly,
a television episode,
a one-hour episode, takes 7 days to shoot.
Jeez.
So,
and that's television. There's a different level when it comes to a movie.
Oh,
right?
big time. I mean, there's more detail. There's more camera. There's more people. The sets aren't built. Whereas you go on television, you have the same studio and you have the Teamsters in changing the walls out and doing different things, and it's already set for you. Whereas, okay, we have this location. We have to lock it down. We have to have police down here to make sure traffic isn't coming.
You had an issue with the Irishman when you were filming, right? There was. Marty had to pull some strings?
He didn't pull any strings. He just made some suggestions. That one, we were shooting up in Pomona, New York. There's a county-owned medical facility that is no longer used by the county, but they have to pay for it for the heat and the hot water, so they rent it out to film crews and television shows. And we were shooting in the Irishman, the nursing home scenes. And we were up there, and all of a sudden, those air raid sirens start going off. You hear for volunteer firefighters stuff like that. But it wasn't going off. It was still going. And so we had cut as soon as we heard it. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, he's asking people, and it's like, you know, well, what is this? And it's like I said, it's not a fire thing. I've never heard one that goes this long. So he had some PAs call the county and find out what it was. And apparently it was a pre-warning for a required nuclear power plant drill, because there's a nuclear power plant up in that area. And So he said, okay, is this like have to happen now or what's the story? So more phone calls were made and they said, no, it has to happen within this month. And he said, I would highly suggest that you remind them how much money we are paying the county, not only to shoot here, but also in other areas of this. And we are only going to be here for 2 more weeks and I need to shoot. Surprisingly, the siren stopped within 3 minutes. I can't even get a table at a restaurant.
Right.
And he, just by making suggestions, right, has the nuclear power test drill.
Right.
Averted.
Right. Nuclear.
You know, folks aren't that important.
Well, look, if we have a nuclear meltdown.
Right. What's going to happen?
No, the test still happened. It wasn't like, you know, an emergency. This was a drill. So right, he didn't do anything wrong.
It's just a test.
That part of the earth we didn't need anyway.
Yeah. That's all right. Nothing's going to happen
it's
over
okay
here. We don't really need the test, but do we want to deal with Martin Scorsese?
But you don't meltdown, realize really, just how this person that you're working with, you know, bumping elbows with, because you're there, you know, at a location scout. It's just you and like 5 other people, and you're pointing out, okay, like all those AEDs have to go because those are the wrong year, or you know, this ramp has to be changed to wood because they didn't have those various different
yeah
things. That you forget just who he is. Because you're now
right
on a personal level with,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden something like that happens, and you're like,
oh yeah,
oh yeah, yeah.
I'm Martin Scorsese. That's right. They got the glasses.
I heard there were times where old Robert De Niro, Frank Sheehan, would get up out of a chair too fast for someone his age, and he would be told, "No, you got to take your time," or up the stairs. Was that you telling him that stuff?
That was me, and it was also his body mechanics person. But one of the things like I did for him, after the funeral scene, when he comes home after his wife had died and he's there, I actually put a 5-pound leg weight on one leg and a 10-pound leg weight on the other. And so this way I explained to him, I said, you've been standing on the cold ground at the funeral. You wore regular dress shoes instead of your orthotics. You didn't use the proper canes. You used wooden ones that you shouldn't have used for like 10 years. And then you had a reception after the funeral. You're exhausted because you just buried your wife. It's been a long day. You were out in the cold and in the rain. You're going to drag your feet like crazy. And the only way he could remember which ones, and it helped him, was to have those weights and to have them at different levels so that that way his gait was staggered.
That's unreal. That's huh almost like what a director would do.
At times, they consider me a technical director advisor because there are some that would just go in and just say, okay, this is what you would do, and you just talk to props. But there are others of us that deal with everybody, whether it's costumes, makeup, the writers to make sure they have the right medications, names, deal with the actors, give them some backstory so that way they can understand what's happening and why.
Were you with them the whole time or just for older Robert De Niro?
I was insisted to be with Bob. Even when they didn't have me scheduled, all of a sudden I get a phone call saying, Bob wants you. Whenever his character, once he got diagnosed with stuff.
Okay.
So it was not necessarily older per se when he was in wheelchair, but once he started to get older. So I was brought on.
So were you there for the ballroom scene when mm-hmm he got the award?
I was there, but not as, believe it or not, I was actually there for another capacity, but not for teching.
Oh, wow. Because I heard they had who did we have in who's from Connecticut? She's from East Haven.
Jordan.
Oh, Jordan.
Yeah.
She was saying that they had to shut it down for the smoke. There was too much smoke.
Well, that happens a lot. Used to happen on Gotham all the time.
Oh, really?
On the TV show, because they had so much smoke. It would set off detectors and all of a sudden the cameras wouldn't, they'd have to match it.
Wow.
You know, stuff like that. But that would happen a lot. We shot a lot of The Irishman at the old Armory down in New York as well. We had the sound stages down there and also on Kaufman's studios.
Well, just talking to you, I could see why the best people hire you.
Seriously.
Very, very detailed.
Very detailed, yes.
Driven.
Yep.
Thanks for coming in. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, thank you. And if it works in schedules, because, you know, in between things, I'd love to. And also, just I'm in negotiations and talking. I've reached out to Yale University and Quinnipiac about being a guest lecturer on their master's program.
Why wouldn't they do that?
For film production.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, there's so much media out there now. It's not just the big names. You have people with cameras and on phones. They have YouTube and so many other outlets. You know, people create. Please do. There's so much out there. And, you know, not just me, but whether it's fire, military, somebody, ask a technical advisor because it will make it that much more credible.
Right. Next time we're going to have you critique some of AJ's videos. Thank you for coming in. Congratulations with all of your Oscar heat.
Yes.
Michael Scott, Drunken Miller. We're Drunken Miller.
Drunken Miller, yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Tammy is here. She walks in and says, how am I going to beat that last guy?
Oh. With your fists.
He was so interesting talking about the Joker.
Oh, I know.
The Joker, the Irishman.
Right.
So cool.
Yeah. I said, well, we're going to talk about sex now. So that's...
Right, more joking.
I want to be on the movies. I want to be like a consultant, like that helps people like move around the sex scene.
Ooh. Right, that's not how she would do that. You know, she would fake it a whole lot different.
You would like this way more than she's liking it, so you need to get into this more.
Exactly, and here's where you would pay her.
A sex choreographer.
Right.
Exactly,
or this is not how people cheat. I would do it differently.
Exactly. Her head would be hitting the backboard this way.
I think I'd be good at it.
Call in your sex story. Everybody on. And it could be weird. It could be something where you got injured or something weird happened.
Somebody walked in.
Or you did that and said, I'll never call this guy again.
The cat sat on your head.
Call this girl again.
Yeah, we don't want just your regular porn story.
No.
Right.
No,
whatever
no.
your story is, call it in. We'll put you in the running for Cheap Trick tickets.
Right.
Get that?
Exactly.
Cheap Trick. Yeah.
Okay. Cheap Trick, yeah.
1-877-764-2535. Did you see the movie The Joker?
I haven't seen it yet. Have you seen it?
It seems like you would want to see it because you're...
It seems like work to me.
The whole therapy thing. Yeah, you'd be analyzing the whole damn time.
All right, so you're more of a couples therapist than a, like a...
I like to help people,
nutbag,
you know, with
thing,
their loving...
No offense to nutbags.
No,
I'm
I like
nutbag.
To help people with love
right.
and sex and the relationship and
right. you don't
getting
wanna...
over cheating yeah. and stuff like that.
Right.
The Joker, what you know of it, what was he suffering from?
Well, I'm fascinated by it, to be honest. I am. I'm truly fascinated by the whole dichotomy of his personality that, you know, he actually became the person he became because of his childhood. Like, we all are who we are because of what's happened to us.
Right.
That's fascinating to me. And so I think that's why it's such a good movie, because it really shows like
people who grew up poor either stay that way or become the opposite.
Right.
Right.
Well, it's because of what was done to him and because of how he survived. So your survival skills are either going to be like the thing that makes you a strong, better person or makes you crazy.
Yeah, I think he failed, didn't he? Like, I don't think that's a success story.
Yeah, the Joker doing good things for people.
I didn't see the movie. What happened to him? Right. What was his...
Well, I don't know, but we just talked about him killing his mother.
It's not just poverty.
Yeah, no, I saw the trailer, and his mom was nuts, and the system failed him, like he needed meds, and his doctor was... Yeah, it was all... It seemed like... And I only watched a 2.5-minute trailer, and it seemed like he was someone who the system failed.
Right.
Look, I grew up with nothing. Like, I scraped and, you know, scavenged, and... I dropped out of high school. I have a PhD and a million letters after my name. Like, you can survive anything. It depends on how resilient you
are. You dropped out of high school.
Exactly.
How did you make that happen?
It's all about you.
Went back to high school, got your
GED? I got my GED.
Wow.
That's
pretty impressive.
I went community college. I worked, you know, 3 jobs. I bartended and waitressed. And,
exactly.
You know, it took me 10 years to get my undergrad. Like, I worked my butt off.
But did you want to take a pillow and smother your mother?
Herself sometimes. I don't get it for work. Ah! It's possible.
I don't know. Like, I'm sure, I don't know what happened with his mother in the movie, but I'm sure she wasn't that stable emotionally either.
Did anyone see
this?
So.
Did you see it, Ashley?
I can't bring myself to watch it yet. Because I know I'm going to...
Yeah, it's a down... So
yeah.
Michael was just telling me, just be ready, because you're not going to feel good at the
end
of
dark,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very dark,
yeah.
It's dark.
I don't want to do that to myself.
Right.
I might have to watch that in a Disney movie right after.
A Disney movie.
I live in the dark right now.
Have some ice cream.
Yeah.
Michael Scott Drunken Miller was on earlier talking about his involvement in The Joker and The Irishman, both nominated for Best Film. He's on the phone now, because we're doing something different, asking you to call in your sex stories.
Right.
And he said, I got one.
Nice.
He's got a sex story. The Joker did.
And it'll be detailed, too.
Oh boy. And medically correct.
There's no ambulance involved.
Right.
There might be.
Oh boy.
You never know.
Is there blood?
This is back when you were an EMT?
This was back when I was riding on a wagon. I was a paramedic at the time.
Oh, jeez.
And first off, I took myself out of the running for the contest. This is not for the contest. This is just to share.
Right. Okay. Just bragging.
You don't want Cheap Trick.
Right.
All right.
Right. So we got a call for an unknown medical, and this is when you don't know, and it's like we happen to be in the area, so even though it was an ALS unit, advanced life support, we still went for it, and we knock on the door, and you never know what you're going to get, whether it's going to be a drug overdose or what, and we hear somebody say, who is it? And we announce ourselves and we say which company we're with. Oh, come on in, please. We're waiting for you. And we go in and we think we're being pranked.
Right, yeah.
Because here's these completely naked young couple, doggy style, in the living room with a phone on the table where she's on the phone with 911.
Okay.
Now that's and a sex story.
Yeah, really. This is what we were waiting for.
We turn around and we're like going, we're looking for the cameras. We're going, okay, we're being pranked, right? This is, and we're about to shut the door. And they said, no, we need your help. He broke. We're like, oh dear. And like we went into, okay, this is legit. They were newlyweds and they were getting too rough in the bedroom and he ruptured. He was stuck inside.
Oh. Ouch.
That's when we also had to.
How do you transport them?
Yeah,
well,
together.
You know, they say join forever.
We had a call for the local fire department to help, and we provided dignity for them. We draped them
That little keychain with the two rubber figures?
Right. Can you just put a splint on
it? I put them in that position.
Right.
This is actually a life-threatening injury because he has a blood clot, and he could actually pass that. So they had to be transported in that position.
In that position.
Chaz is like holding his face, like, oh my god.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, okay, I can imagine Chaz and AJ about to wince because they had to lance him at the hospital.
Oh. You got to drain the blood out.
Yeah.
How do they go inside to do that?
You cut it. You got to cut it open.
Yeah, but while they were still connected.
Well, you got to separate them at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You got to pull them
apart.
But
that's all done in the emergency room. That's why it's like they have to monitor blood pressure, make sure the deep vein thrombosis doesn't go through.
Right.
No, kids at home, you can break your penis. This is a real thing.
Yep.
I'll tell you on the funny EMS side. There's nothing like all of a sudden being at your local grocery store about 2 or 3 months later and somebody telling you thank you so much and you're not remembering who it was and all of a sudden you make eye contact and in your mind you're no longer wearing clothes.
Right. Oh, it's you again. I didn't recognize the clothes.
And then do you look down? Do you like look immediately down?
Thank you for saving my penis.
Right.
So how's it hanging?
Right. Yeah.
To the left now.
Exactly. Thanks for the cast.
To the left.
Wow.
So, looks like I'm hitchhiking southbound.
Exactly. It's like a bend in the road now. Oh, hey, Banana Bane.
Phil, really did you have a question?
No, I just like how he has to say, so we had to call the fire department. It's like there's some code that goes out. It's like, we have something going on. It is a serious situation, but you do want to see this.
You got to see this, man. You have got to see this, man.
You don't even have them come in. I mean, it's like, in all honesty, it's like you call the firemen because they're going to have to lift the backboard to get them out and everything to keep the position because it's not like they can walk out.
But they are the miracle workers. When someone gets their head stuck in like a gumball machine, right?
Yeah.
It's like, who can figure this out?
Right.
Call the fire department.
Well, EMS has their cell phones out and taking pictures of them doing it.
I hope there's no selfies floating around.
Oh, boy.
This is to document
the proper way in case this ever happens again. That's what this is for.
Exactly right. Yeah, and the Christmas party.
Well, this should be a warning to all young men out there. Like, you know, be easy. Go easy.
Go easy, right.
Try not to break your wing.
Don't snap,
Anybody else have their legs crossed right now?
Does it work after it breaks?
Like, it's just crooked.
The rehab is fun.
The problem is the scar tissue when it heals and then... Then every time you get an erection, it breaks, and then it heals and breaks. And,
yeah. What do you mean it breaks? The tissue?
The tissue breaks. The scar tissue, yeah.
Wow.
And then does it create a bump there?
It creates what's called Peyronie. So, like, you have a curve in your penis.
An Italian beer?
And the scar tissue forms around that. It depends on how.
Is that a good thing?
No, it's bad.
No, but I mean for her. Does that, could it be a good thing?
Everyone has a curve at some level.
So no one's perfectly straight.
Well, some people are perfectly straight, but most people have some curve. On some level.
Wow.
Yeah. Like a little bend in the road here.
Yeah.
So you'd be able to pick him out of a lineup.
A wiener lineup.
Yeah, let me see a bendy straw in the front.
All right. Number 5 wiener turn. Oh, yeah, you're in.
Yep. Look at the shadow. Yep. 10-3.
That's Michael, a good story, Michael.
I guarantee you, this segment will be played back when we're on vacation.
Yes, it will. See that?
Thank you, brother. Natasha in Brantford, what's your sex story?
So I was seeing this guy. We'd only gone out for like a couple of weeks. And he told me he was like he was religious. But, you know, I didn't know how religious he was, which is fine. And I found out like on the night of our fourth date, we were at his house and, you know, we're having sex. And ladies will appreciate this. So I'm like about to get there and I yelled out, "Oh my God." And he stopped me mid sex and he stopped me completely. And he was like, "Could you please not take the Lord's name in vain?"
Oh my God.
It was a compliment.
Saying, "Oh my God." It's not taking it in vain. Is it?
That's a thumbs up for you. For him, rather.
I know. I thought we were past that, but I guess that was too much for him.
Wow.
Yeah. Getting kind of preachy.
I didn't know saying, "Oh yeah. my God," is using the Lord's name in vain.
Right.
That's the worst time to stop.
Right?
Yes.
Like, that's what Ashley's fixated
like
on.
10 seconds. Right.
That's the most important part of the story.
So that didn't work out.
Yeah. Was that your last date?
I mean, I gave it like a couple more shots and then I was like, no, he's for real. I didn't know if like something was going on or if he was being funny or whatever, but right. Yeah, no, that was him.
Oh, so when he said, "Hey, well, can you not take the Lord's name in vain?" Were you like,
get
back to work, sucker.
I'm a little busy right now. I'm a little busy.
Or I'm going to punch your goddamn head in.
Right. Like, I hopped off and I like put my pants back on. I'm like, I'm gonna go watch some TV.
You hopped off like you jumped off a horse. Yeah. I love that. You're like a cowboy.
Right.
Yeah, hopped off, went in the bar, and had me a drink.
That's right. Just rolling.
I put my boots back on.
That's one hell of a walk of shame.
Wow.
totally.
Was that the first time you were having sex? With him?
Yes, it was.
Okay,
yes,
date number
yes,
four.
With him.
Date four.
Yeah.
Where did you meet?
We met on a dating app, and he came from...
was it Christian Mingle?
He came from, like, a super Southern... Yeah, he could have been, exactly. Like, I guess he grew up, like, super Christian, which is fine and great, but, like...
That's fine.
To the point where it just popped up at the weirdest times.
Yeah. You swipe righteous or damned. righteous, damned.
Devil,
righteous,
angel.
Damned. Evil, good.
Really,
evil,
the fact that he was wearing a black shirt with a white collar should have been a...
Right. Yeah. Just call me father.
All right, you're in the running for the tickets. Thank you.
Thank you.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.